This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. He's been called Moscow's mouthpiece, but he's also been described as refreshing because he confronts American stereotypes about life in the Soviet Union. You've seen my guest, Vladimir Posner, on Nightline and Donahue, explaining, usually defending, Soviet policies. Posner is a Soviet journalist who's a political commentator and hosts a Soviet TV show on current issues. But until a few years ago, Posner was better known outside his country than in it. His commentary in the Soviet Union was limited to English-speaking broadcasts, and his early articles were published in the English-language magazine Soviet Life. Posner sounds like he grew up in New York, because he did. His Russian-born father emigrated to France in 1922, where he married. The family left for New York during World War II and moved to the Soviet Union in the early 50s. I told Posner it's easy to think of him as the Soviet ambassador to American TV talk shows, but he didn't go for that description at all.
To be an ambassador, you have to represent your country, and that's something I've never done. It is true that I have appeared on American television perhaps more than most of my citizen friends, but in fact, I don't represent the government or the country. Simply, I guess it's just the fact that I do speak English, that I was one of the first to appear, and so that's the impression that's been created.
Do you think of yourself as representing a new image for the Soviet Union on American television?
Well, not really. I first appeared on American television at the very end of 1979. I think it was on Nightline, and it was because of a journalist who's now working for NPR, incidentally, Annie Garrels, who was at that time the ABC bureau chief in Moscow, who thought it would be good to have a Soviet journalist talking about things Soviet, not just American journalists talking about what was happening in the Soviet Union. So that perhaps was a novelty in itself, and the fact that I speak English without a Russian accent, and again, that was new. But I don't think that it was a novelty in any other sense, simply because before me, there weren't really many Soviets on American television at all, so there was nothing to compare with.
Do you think, though, that the Soviets who were on American television misunderstood American media and didn't always use it very well?
I guess you might have a point there, although I don't think they cared. I think they cared much more about what people in the Soviet Union would think about what they'd said. They knew, just as I knew, that they were being watched by Soviet officials in the embassy, that they were being watched by Soviet officials working at the UN in New York City, and that there would be reports filed on how they'd done. And they were much more worried and much more concerned about what the Soviets would have to say than what about what Americans would think. So that they were going to, I would say, toe the line no matter what, and perhaps look like very unpleasant Russian villains, they couldn't care less as long as they got good marks. And I think perhaps that was the greatest difference between that type of Soviet journalist and myself, and I think that was probably noticed.
You said that as a journalist that you don't consider yourself in any way representing the government or a spokesperson of the government, that you're there as an independent person speaking your views. I think some people are skeptical of that in the sense that they think perhaps you wouldn't be allowed to practice journalism if you weren't carrying out to some extent the views of the party.
I understand perfectly why they might believe that, and I think that up until the time when Gorbachev became general secretary, there would be reason to think that if you as a journalist did not, let us say, respect a certain framework, you would not be able to do your work. And that's true. And I did respect that framework. But there's a difference between being that and a spokesman, a mouthpiece. I never was a mouthpiece. I never did come out as a spokesman for the government. Now, if people were to ask me, but did you ever in any of these interviews critical, were you ever critical about your government? Did you ever criticize the party? I would have to say that no, I did not. I did disagree on certain things, but when I did that, there were people in this country who said, well, if he's doing it, then he had to have permission to do it. He wouldn't risk doing it without that permission. And there they were wrong. But they were prisoners of, and many of them still are, I'd have to say, prisoners of their own prejudice, of their own stereotypes, that have been built up as a result of U.S. media. This is what a Russian is supposed to do. This is how a Russian looks. This is how a Russian speaks. And if you don't conform to that, then something's wrong.
Vladimir Posner is my guest, and he's a Soviet journalist and political observer. He's also a frequent guest on U.S. shows such as Nightline and Donahue. He's written a new autobiography called Parting with Illusions. In your new book, you write that part of the reason for your effectiveness on American television was your willingness to admit to certain shortcomings in the Soviet Union. But did you have to be very choosy about which shortcomings you'd admit to?
Of course I did. I had to be careful, knowing that if I went too far, I would probably lose my job, which nearly happened to me once when I was critical of Soviet involvement in Afghanistan. That was back in 1981. But I'd like to stress that what I had to do is true of any journalist. I mean, imagine, if you will, an American journalist working, let us say, for ABC or for CBS or for NBC, going on Soviet television during those years when we were in a confrontational stance and being critical of America. I'm sure that he would or she would be in trouble with their own network. People know these things, and I definitely had to be careful as well.
Do you think the Cold War is over?
Yes, I do. I think it's over for good. I don't see any possibility of a revival of the Cold War. That's finished.
Why do you feel so certain of that?
Because the conditions that made the Cold War possible are gone and cannot be revived. There are no longer two blocks in Europe, and there's no way that you can have them again. The confrontational stance between the U.S. and the USSR is no longer the same, nor can it be, because of what's happened in Eastern Europe and in the Soviet Union. It is just not to happen again, that's all. There's no way. And I think that I'm not saying that there's no danger of confrontation as such, and that there could not be, at least theoretically, a military confrontation. But the Cold War, as a political instrument, is no longer viable.
I'm wondering what your reaction and the mood of your friends is about the reunification of Germany.
I think you have to distinguish between my reaction, a man of my age, I'm 56, and I have my prejudice, and I'll call it that, my prejudice about Germany, East and West. But there are other people who are younger, and there are much more of them, thankfully, who don't have that prejudice. And I think, very strongly feel, that prejudice or no, the people of Germany have the right to decide whether or not they want to reunite. And I think it's normal for a country that was together and it was split by something as tragic as the war, to come back together again. And I think most Soviets would share that view. And I don't think that there's as much apprehension about the danger of a united Germany as some seem to make us believe, because, again, the situation is not the same. In the nuclear era, Germany, a united Germany, does not represent the kind of threat it did in the 1940s.
Well, there are discussions now about whether a reunified Germany should be a neutral country or a NATO ally. Do you think that the Soviet Union would allow Germany, if reunited, to become a NATO ally?
That's a very serious question, and I think you have to. There's a legitimate consideration there of security, and that is the Soviet position, indeed, that Germany should be neutral, while the Western position is that Germany should remain a NATO ally. Personally, my view is that I would prefer to see a neutral Germany, but I don't think that the condition of neutrality is going to be the final word. I believe the Germanys will unite no matter what. It will happen. I think that perhaps we should look forward to the time when there will not be a NATO or a Warsaw Pact organization. I don't think we need that anymore. We do need a small contingent, perhaps for American security and for Soviet security. It might make sense considering the danger of growing nationalism that we do see, especially now in Eastern Europe. But we may not need those military blocs anymore. I think that's something to look forward to.
The Communist Party recently voted in the Soviet Union to end its monopoly on political power, so there now could be other parties in the Soviet Union. What do you think that's going to mean for life in the immediate future? What kind of parties do you envision coming up as alternatives?
Not only that there could be, as you said, but there will be. There will be many, many parties coming up in Soviet Union. I would suspect that you will have scores of parties to begin with, and they reflect very accurately the situation today, where you have scores of different political groups that are actually just one step away from becoming full-fledged and now legitimate parties. I think it's very good that this has happened. As a member of the party, the Communist Party, I have consistently supported the idea of a multi-party system. I think that for any party to be legitimate, it has to win in an election against other parties. If not, then how can it claim to represent the majority? So I think it's good. I think it'll make the Communist Party a somewhat leaner, if I may use that that word, organization. Not meaner, but definitely leaner. And I think people have to have a choice.
Well, you joined the Communist Party at the age of 33 in 1967. What do you think the chances are that you'll join a new party?
It all depends on what the party platform, the political platform of the Communist Party is going to be. It was supposed to be published on the 8th of February, but when I left Moscow on the 12th of February, it had not yet been published. So as I speak to you now, I don't know what that party platform is. But for a person like myself, a lot depends on that. If I find that the platform is lacking, that I do not agree with it, it may well be that I will think about joining another party, the goals of which, the platform of which, the ideals of which are much closer to what I would like. And today, we do have that alternative choice, which was not true just a few years ago.
How bad are shortages of food and other supplies in the Soviet Union now?
I would say they're very bad in the sense of people being thoroughly frustrated with having to stand in line for just about everything. People are not going hungry in the Soviet Union. We do not have anything close to starvation or even hunger. But people have been willing to sacrifice because they were told that it was for a wonderful cause and that the day would come when finally they would get their fill. What has happened is that the cause has been thrown in doubt. The people they believed in very often turned out to be criminals. The things they believed in turned out to be lies. And so they say, we've had enough of this. We are sick and tired of being told to wait for a better tomorrow. We want something better now.
Is the Soviet Union in the midst of a depression, of an economic depression?
I don't think the word depression is the correct word. It's in a state of what I would call pre-crisis. We're one step away from an economic crisis, not a depression. And if we do not get our act together this year, in my opinion, 1990, then I believe that there is a real danger of perestroika just going to pieces and the country going to pieces, the consequences of which would be, at least in my opinion, pretty hard to predict.
Let's talk a little bit about your background. Your father was Russian, your mother French, met in Paris, married there, and I think it was during World War II that they actually relocated to the United States.
Yes.
Which is where you grew up,
right.
and where you remained till I think the age of 19.
No, much earlier.
Much earlier.
I left at the tail end of 1948 when I was going on 15.
How did your life in the United States change at the beginning of the Cold War?
Well, see, although my father was a Soviet citizen, he became a Soviet citizen in 1940, I think, or 1941. And although he talked to me a lot about the Soviet Union and about what he thought was a just society, I never considered myself to be Russian. My mother was French, and my first tongue was French. So I thought I was French, but I really lived like the all-American kid from New York City. I lived down in the village. I went to a very nice school. And I felt American, although I knew I wasn't American. But I didn't have any problems ever until, indeed, the very famous speech by Winston Churchill in Fulton, Missouri, when he said that an iron curtain had come down on Europe and the Cold War was on. I was very pro-Soviet. I was very pro everything that the Soviet Union represented, and I was, and I liked to talk, much as I still do. And so, because of my views, I got beat up in school. I started going to Stuyvesant High School, and there I had fights and things like that. My father was fired soon, and we moved out of the beautiful duplex we had in the village, and my parents moved into a very small ground-level apartment on 12th Street, and I went to live with a friend of theirs on Park Avenue. So I didn't go down in life, but it wasn't the same thing. And our friends stopped seeing us and stopped calling us, and because the FBI came around to see us and the phones were tapped. And altogether, it became a very difficult time, which I remember very well as being painful.
Why did your family decide to move to the Soviet Union?
Well, my father had wanted to go there for many years. He remembered the revolution of his childhood very romantically, and he felt that, the Soviet Union was the just society on earth. And although my father was making very good money in this country, working for Lowe's International, which was a subdivision of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, he wanted to go to the Soviet Union. He wanted to return and take his family with him, that is to say, my mother, my brother, and myself.